stories, and we'll do a little bit of introduction. And as always, you have to start with definitions to know what it is that you're talking about. There is no Hebrew word that corresponds exactly to the idea of charis, which is grace in the Greek. But there's a word in the Old Testament that is used, it's used 69 times, and it's the term ken. To say that properly, you have to say ken and kind of at the beginning of it. So it's ken. But this word, according to Brown, Driver, and Briggs, means favor, grace, charm, favor, elegance, or acceptance. It's a noun, the way it's used in the Old Testament. Most of the time, this word is translated favor and not grace. And you'll see why in just a few minutes. And then the term in the New Testament for grace is the term charis or charis. And the root meaning of this word, it has three root meanings. The first is a quality that comes from an individual. And you see that on the big handout that I gave you. The second way that it's used is actions taken to benefit others. And that's the way we usually use this word grace. And then it's the accomplishment of God's actions. So we'll see all of those as we go through this, and as we continue to look at different parts of grace, you'll start seeing grace used in these different ways. So you have to kind of understand it in these different ways. So as we go on here, what did I do? Zoom. Okay, there we are again. Let's see. Okay. So it's used 166 times in the New Testament, or 156 times in the New Testament. It is kind of a New Testament kind of concept. And I think that's because it gets developed more in the New Testament. It's not because it's not in the Old Testament. I have to tell you that I made the mistake for a long time of thinking that grace wasn't in the Old Testament. And I did that based on John 1:17. Grace and truth came, the law came by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus. And I wanted in my mind to pit grace against law. And I kind of made the mistake of thinking that there was no grace in the Old Testament. There was no grace before Jesus came. And that's a bad approach. Grace, according to what I could find, the word grace doesn't appear in any of the Jewish vocabulary lists. It's not in the information websites that I can read that are put together by Jewish scholars. It's not really in many of the Jewish print resources. Again, I have to refer to the Jewish print resources that I can read. I just don't see grace discussed from the perspective of Judaism. And that's, I'm not sure that I understand exactly why that is. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So I tried to understand rabbinic sources, and kind of the best information that I have about the way that the rabbis talked about grace, and that, remember, that would have had a big influence on Paul's thinking about grace before he became a Christian, and it would have had a big influence on Jewish conceptions of grace after Paul began to talk about grace so much. And that's why Paul was always getting in trouble with the Jewish leadership, because Paul focused everything on grace and they didn't. So this was something interesting that I found in the writings of some of the rabbis that put together the Talmud. And I wish that I could go farther back, but everything that I can find older than the Talmudic rabbis is written in Hebrew, and I can't read it. So what I can find from the Talmudic rabbis is that God created the world with loving kindness and justice, because loving kindness alone would have allowed sin to proliferate, and justice alone would have condemned all of creation. So this is this idea that Paul has to deal with in Romans 5. He says, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. Because that's what the rabbis were arguing. You keep talking about grace, you're going to encourage people to sin. And Paul says, no, that's not the case. But that's the mistake that the rabbis made. It was the same mistake that I was making. The rabbis contended contended essentially that God's favor, forgiveness, and mercy are not automatic, because that would unbalance justice. So grace has to be understood with justice. And justice and grace has to be, or can't be earned, because if grace is earned, then that gives humans control over God. Okay, so there's a complicated relationship with grace in the Old Testament, particularly among the rabbis, and that's the people that were teaching in the Old Testament period. So let's think for just a minute about different time periods in God's relationship with man. Okay? This is a little bit more complex diagram than what we generally look at. If you go back to the Garden of Eden before sin, this is when everything was going the way it was supposed to go in the Garden of Eden. God and man were together, and they enjoyed a beautiful relationship. I get the impression that God came down and walked in the garden in the afternoon and spoke with man. And the reason that I say that is once Adam and Eve sinned, then when God came down to walk in the garden, Adam went and hid himself because he didn't want to talk to God. So this is the only time that I can find, that I can conceptualize, when man existed and sin hadn't entered the picture. So this is in the garden, Adam and Eve, before Adam and Eve sinned. Then they're kicked out of the garden. And you have this time period from when they left the garden until God made the promise to Abraham in Genesis 12, 1 and 2. That the threefold promise, we've talked about that a lot, that you will become a great nation, you will inherit this land, and in your seed all nations of the earth will be blessed. So that's the time when God gives a promise to Abraham. So kind of fix that in your mind. And then God made covenants with Abraham. And the covenant, or with Abraham's descendants at Sinai. That's the Old Testament law. Okay. So the Old Testament law is 430 years after God made the promise to Abraham. And that Old Testament law ultimately gave us Jesus. He was a part of that promise. Okay. Now, again, right here, no sin. So there's two times when there's no sin. Jesus and in the garden before Adam and Eve sinned. Okay.
You're saying Jesus had no sin.
Jesus had no sin.
Okay.
Yeah. Jesus had no sin. Adam and Eve had no sin. Only three people who've ever lived had no sin. At least for a portion of their life. Okay? And then Jesus, of course, dies on the cross, the church is established, and then we have grace in the context of the church. Now, what happened when God gave the promise to Abraham, Genesis 12? He also gave a promise to Israel, to Ishmael. Promised him that he would become a nation. And he gave him land. And we talked about that before. He did the same thing with Esau. Gave him a promise that he would be a great nation and that he would have certain land. Esau became the Edomites. Okay? So those promises that were made to Ishmael and Esau, and I think by extension were probably made to other people, although the Bible doesn't talk about them. These continued all the way down to the church. Okay? This is in my thinking. I just don't know what was, I don't know whether there was any covenant made with Ishmael like there was with Abraham. So Abraham had the old law, but it was, the old law was only for his family, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't for anybody outside of Abraham's descendants.
But we do know that other nations had a relationship with God.
Yeah,
they
sure.
Were expected to have to live in a certain way. So the assumption is that there may have been some kind of a covenant or agreement with God, and he had a relationship with those people. It just wasn't the one that was going to bring the sacrifice and bring
right.
Salvation.
Right. You've got places like Assyria, mm-hmm. who are going to be destroyed because they're not living the way that they're supposed to live. So God had to have expectations for the way that Nineveh was supposed to be living. They weren't living that way. God said, I'll destroy you. And they returned. Now, they didn't return to the Sinai covenant. The Sinai covenant, the Old Testament was never for them. And it was never for anyone other than the Jews. This covenant, the Sinai covenant, had three parts. Had It repeated the land covenant, it repeated this, the nation covenant, and it repeated Jesus. Okay? So this gave us Jesus eventually. These didn't, but they come into the church because Jesus pulls everybody back together. Does that make sense? So, this is Adam and Eve. Who is a pre-promise person?
Noah, Methuselah.
Okay, Noah, Methuselah.
Oh, just...
Abraham.
Abraham, yeah, before okay. He was given the promise. And Sarah.
Right. So, this is pre-promise. Then you had the covenant that was made with Israel at Sinai, and that's the majority of the Old Testament. Okay? Because the Old Testament really, because it's right here on the Sinai covenant, when you think about it. The only part of the Old Testament that's prior to the Sinai covenant is Genesis. Because when they come out of Egyptian captivity, they get the Sinai covenant. And that's what governs their relationship with God. Okay? You're smiling.
Because I'm thinking, I should know all this, but I never remember it.
That's okay. This is generally not presented this way. Generally, we say that if you were not Israel, you were strangers from the covenants of promise. And we mistakenly think that means that you had no relationship with God. And that's not true.
Hey, Dean.
Yeah.
After our study of Hebrews, wouldn't we also say that Melchizedek was pre-promise? He's held up as an example of that great high priest that followed.
Right. Melchizedek is also in this pre-promise section back here. So he had a relationship with God. He wasn't a Jew, but had the relationship with God. Now, the question then becomes this. Was there grace back here in the garden?
It was definitely favor.
Okay, what makes you say that?
Well, I think of the graciousness or the favor that God showed to Adam and Eve even after they sinned. And one that I think is one that I guess came to my consciousness fairly recently when we were studying it, is that after they sinned and they said they were naked and they didn't have clothes, God gave them clothes. He didn't have to. He did that out of just a kindness and his loving kindness and his graciousness. He helped them to cover their nakedness.
Okay.
And I think that that's also symbolic of what Jesus did in covering our sins. But I just think that we see God extending himself over and over and over. And
okay, but that, let me go back.
That's after sin.
Right, after sin. Was there grace before sin?
Well, he gave them his favor in terms of the food to eat and you know, sustenance and all
okay.
of that. I mean, I don't know if that's grace or not, but it's certainly showing his favor.
Okay.
He set everything up, designed everything for their well-being. And that to me seems in line with that loving kindness and grace that God extends. I mean, Adam and Eve didn't do anything to earn that,
okay.
anything to deserve it. he created them and then created an environment where they could thrive and seemingly were happy. I mean, I don't know that they weren't.
Okay.
Until sin entered the picture.
Okay.
But yeah, so I think that in that regard, I guess I could say that grace existed. Certainly loving kindness and favor existed.
Okay. A lot of times people define grace as God doing for man what man can't do for himself.
Well,
unmerited favor.
Unmerited favor, but the...
Is that kind of a cliche?
Well, no, I think that's part of the definition, that you know, we don't do anything to deserve it.
Right.
And
that's the standard answer, is what I mean.
Right.
It is,
except the one where he says that, you know, that God gave something that man can't do for himself. I mean, really, if you think about it, we can't do anything for ourselves.
Right.
Well, when you go all the way back to the garden before uh-huh. sin, uh-huh. the ultimate expression of grace, in my mind, is woman.
Oh. Yeah.
Man can't make woman. So, when God expresses his favor to Adam, because it was not good for Adam to be alone, he wanted to do something for Adam. So then
he had Adam look at all the animals, and there was nothing that was suitable.
Right. That was, Adam was stuck looking at the animals to find a help that was suitable for him, but there was nothing there. Okay? So when he needed a help, he had to go to God. God gives him woman.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that as grace. It's interesting.
So the giving of woman to man predates sin. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with sin. It was him, it was God doing something good for man.
And it really wasn't dependent upon man doing anything good for God.
That's
it
right.
It wasn't dependent upon
that's right.
That. So it was unmerited. He did not do anything to deserve it, warrant it.
All that he did to warrant it was he desired it.
I guess, yeah.
God saw that it wasn't good for man to be alone. Mm-hmm. And so the man went looking at the animals.
Mm-hmm.
But among the animals, he couldn't find a help that was suitable for him. Okay? So in my mind, woman becomes the ultimate expression of grace. And it has nothing to do with sin. It's God doing something for man that man can't do for himself. Now, the really interesting notion in Luke, the 12th chapter, or Luke, the 2nd chapter, at verse 52. And it says, Jesus, sinless, increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. That word favor there is grace. Same word. So God gives grace to Jesus. And it, again, has nothing to do with sin. There was favor given to Noah, which, at least as far as I can say, Noah found grace in the eyes of God. God gave Noah a plan for an ark to save his souls. He was going to wipe out the world. Had nothing to do with Noah. The grace was God doing something out of favor to Noah.
Noah was found righteous.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find where it says that, because Noah...
Look at Hebrews, the 11th chapter.
Okay.
I think that's where you want that.
Well, I also think the Genesis account, but yeah, I could look there, but... but I do think that the Genesis account also says that. So, but because he was righteous didn't necessarily mean that he deserved this or that he had earned it. But
right.
I'm just saying that, but he was righteous. He had faith. It says, by faith, Noah, when warned about things not seen in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith.
You're in Luke, Hebrews
11. Hebrews 11, yeah.
In Genesis 6, it says, where did I just have it? Finds favor with God, commissioned to build the ark. Genesis 6, 8 through 22. So is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, and that favor... That word is grace. Except in the Old Testament, it's ken.
See, and I would have pronounced it chen with a ch.
I know. It's like the word Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Hanukkah is
C-H-A.
Hanukkah.
Yeah.
It's a kind of an ugly.
Or Xanadu with an X.
Yeah. Well, Genesis 6:9 says this is the account of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God. Noah had three sons.
Go
ahead.
That idea is repeated in 7:1.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it is. He says, because I have found you righteous in this generation.
Yeah.
So he said, the Lord said to Noah, because I found you righteous in this generation, you're going to go into the ark. So there was some kind of a reciprocal thing there.
But once we get to Noah, and we're talking about Noah, it's tempting to relate grace to sin.
It indicates that, though.
In 6:8 it says, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord.
Okay.
So...
But we know Noah. We know Noah was a sinner.
Right.
Okay.
That's true. Yeah. My version says favor instead of grace.
Yeah, favor instead of grace. Favor is used most of the time in the Old Testament. It's used. Let's see. Let me go back to my notes here.
It's
grace.
69.
Yeah.
The Old Testament.
In the Old Testament, 38 times in the Torah, or in the first five books, and then 31 times in the rest of the Old Testament. But most of the time in the Old Testament, the King James translation is translated favor.
And just because he was, you know, I mean, I think that the story, the way the story plays out, Noah's response to God, his righteousness, was in comparison and contrast with his contemporaries, right?
Yeah, probably.
It doesn't necessarily mean he was sinless and perfect. That he,
right.
You know, it just doesn't mean that.
Right.
So
he obeyed God by building the ark.
Yeah, he was obedient, and he was a righteous man.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think that we tend to equate grace, or the giving of grace, with sinlessness. That if I'm pure enough, and it gets back to that merited, you know, if I earn it, then, you know, if I do all the tasks that I'm supposed to do, then maybe God will be gracious enough to let me into heaven. Well, that's not a picture of grace at all. That's not what grace is. And so I don't want to, when I say that, that Noah was a righteous and blameless man, it doesn't mean that he was completely sinless.
But we, there are people who were sinless that received grace.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus received grace.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. And I think Adam and Eve, prior to sin in the garden, I think they were the recipients of God's favor.
Absolutely.
Okay. So it, grace can't be understood relative to sin. If we start trying to understand it relative to sin, then it messes us up.
But I thought we got grace. He gave us grace because we are sinners.
Okay.
But that's in the New Testament, I know.
Okay.
He's gracious enough to forgive us. And
okay. So he gives us forgiveness. But that, in a sense, that's just like him giving Adam Eve.
Okay.
It's this wonderful favor that God gives us. Okay? Now, there's one other thing that I want to say in terms of introduction. And this really has to do with what happened when Adam sinned. What exactly did Adam lose when he sinned?
He lost God's favor, didn't he? He lost God's
I don't know that
he lost
favor. I don't know that he lost favor, but he lost the relationship.
Yes, he did. Well, you separate yourself from God,
Right, right.
I know God still was there with him.
Right. Now, when you, the reason that I gave you that handout that is the article that Robert Turner had written is he goes into a long discussion about Augustine and what Augustine believed that Adam lost when he sinned in the garden. And Augustine suggests, as from what I can read of Augustine, and I spent some time reading the basic writings of Augustine that were edited by, or with an introduction by Oates. Augustine almost concludes that man lost his ability to understand God. He lost the ability to want to do good. And God has to give that desire back to man, and that's what grace is. That's what Augustine argues.
I'm not thinking about that.
Okay, well, I reject that idea.
I do too.
And kind of, I'll tell you the reason why I reject the idea. And it goes back to reasoning about woman. God knew that Adam wanted a help that was suitable for him. Okay? Adam had no sin. This is prior to whatever was lost. Adam wanted good. Did he still want good after he sinned? Did he still want Eve after he sinned?
Well, I think he probably wanted Joker, but I think he loved her.
Okay.
I mean, because she...
But see, that flies in the face of Augustine arguing that man is so totally corrupted that he can't even want good.
I don't believe that.
After sin.
It's been proven over and over again that that's not true.
Well,
with people we know.
I think that's... In my mind, that's one of the strongest arguments, that even after Adam sinned, he was still capable of wanting good. Oh, what did I do? Sorry.
Leaned on your screen. Or leaned on whatever that thing is called. What is it called?
The remote thing?
Oh, the remote or the board, whatever. Whatever you type on, what's that called?
Oh, hold it.
The keyboard.
Keyboard, okay.
I touched the keyboard and ruined my display here.
Can you get back to Zoom?
Can I? There it is.
There it is.
Let's see. Let's get down here to the end. That's what I want. Adam's ability to understand good was not lost as a result of the fall. He still desired Eve. So I think Augustine is wrong. I don't think that's what grace has to do, is to restore. Grace is not intended to restore man's ability to desire good.
No, I think grace is a gift. It's a gift.
Okay.
That we want.
It's the gift of the good.
Yeah.
I think Kim's the wheels are turning inside Kim's head. I can tell there's smoke coming out of her ears.
It's just causing me to think. I just, obviously Adam's relationship at the point of sin, Adam's relationship with God changed. And there was a series of consequences as a result of that sin. One was that he was going to physically die. There's no indication that he was going to physically die before that point in time.
I think if he hadn't eaten the tree, he would have, because of the way God talks about it and says, lest he take of the tree of life and live forever, we're going to have to put him out of the garden.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
He lost access to the tree of life.
Right. But because he said, by the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and dust you will return. I'm not sure that was pronounced prior to sin. But anyway, so the relationship obviously changed. He no longer had the relationship where, I can't even imagine walking and talking with God in the cool of the day and walking with God in the garden.
In that beautiful place.
It's a picture, but it's a picture of Jesus. I mean, Jesus is Adam, and so it's very complicated, but simple all at the same time, because it really very clearly talks about desire, talks about God wanting to show favor. I don't know of another way to say it. Show favor to his creation. And the more I grow and the more I learn, the more I study, I am more and more and more impressed with how much God desires me. Desires us. He wants us in his presence. He wants us. And he went to such great lengths to where sacrifice his own son so that we could have that with him and he could have it with us. You know, maybe I'm so impressed with that because, you know, when I was growing up and I was left with the impression that God just kind of tolerates us and puts up with us and okay, I'll forgive you this time, you know, we're such sinners and we're separated from God, but the opposite is true. That what the opposite is that he desires us so much that all through these pages it tells us over and over and over again the great lengths that God will go to so that we can have a relationship with him. Anyway, that's what I think about in terms of grace, is that gift of that relationship. And that he desires it as much as I desire it. And can I desire it when I'm not in it? Yeah. Yeah, I think Augustine's wrong.
Yeah.
Like you. I think, you know.
I don't think that's what Adam lost at the fall.
No. No, I don't think so.
And by extension, it's not what we suffer a loss of.
He may have lost, because he lost that intimacy in terms of a relationship with God, that may have a bearing on understanding God.
I don't think
any further. I don't know. But, you know, and that whole concept of understanding, I have difficulty with. That's just my.
Well, yeah,
the
but
wheels
I think
are turning.
When you're ashamed, which they were, and you know he knew he did wrong. They knew they did wrong. That puts you in a whole different state. I mean,
sure.
A whole different state of mind, and it should.
Well,
it
suddenly
should.
they were embarrassed and ashamed and vulnerable. Felt vulnerable.
Right. Yeah.
And because God said, "Who told you you're naked? Mm-hmm. I never told you that."
Right.
So suddenly they had some kind of understanding.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So they did have an understanding.
Right.
You know, so they didn't lose that.
Yeah. This is very fascinating. This is interesting.
Okay. Any questions at this point?
I don't know, but I have to keep it simple, stupid.
Oh, that's a whole lot of questions.
I don't remember. 2 seconds.
Well, take this with a grain of salt. This is Dean.
Okay, Dean.
Okay. And that's all that anytime I develop an idea that I didn't read somewhere, I get worried about it.
So what's your idea?
I'm sorry?
What's your Dean that you're going to put out there?
The Dean is grace existing in the garden. Grace existing with Jesus. I have not read that anywhere. So that grace, the best way to understand grace is not relative to sin. And it's not relative to merit. Okay?
Is mercy?
We say it's unmerited favor. Well, it's not really unmerited favor. It has nothing to do with merit.
But does mercy,
it's just favor.
Does mercy relate to sin? Sorry.
Well, I was thinking this.
Spent too much time thinking about grace.
Well, grace. We almost use grace and mercy interchangeably.
Yes,
we do.
But they're saying together because they're two different things. They're two different aspects, and so. My initial thought about that is grace is not related to sin, I don't think. But mercy is. Mercy is that forgiveness of sin. When I say grace is not related to sin, it's related to sin in that I don't access God's the gift of salvation without acknowledging my sin and having the mercy applied to forgive my sin.
Okay.
And then I receive that grace, the extended grace, I guess, is the way to say it, the salvation grace. But, I mean, other gracious gifts that God gives mankind, he gives to sinners as well as...
Yeah, he makes the rain to fall on the just and on the unjust.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's favor of God.
Right.
Okay. Now my brain is trying to process mercy and grace and how those two are related.
Don't get too complicated. Be like Ted and bring it down to the 6th grade level.
I imagine we'll get there in this study. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed the... well, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy this, but I enjoyed reading this.
Yes.
This
that's helpful. gives you a little bit to go on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, I guess I'm weird, but when we study different things, but we can use the same scripture, but we're studying a different word or a different, it's not a different subject. But when you're reading these, you think of grace. When you're reading the, you know, and forgiveness and God's loving kindness and everything. And not that you don't other times, but every time we do a different study, you get more out of the verses.
You see a different aspect
of the verse.
I agree. That's why we need to be in the Word all the time.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. Let's see. Jerry, you want to lead us in a closing prayer and we'll be dismissed?